Okay, tonight is Wednesday night, January 4th, or 7th day of the month of Tevet. This is the women's Mishnah share. We're doing Maseches Chulin and focusing on the Gemara on the bottom of Daf Dalet Amud Beis. Okay, Rabotai. Last time we did Chulin, 2 weeks ago, we had mentioned Rava's opinion about how to read the Mishnah. We're going to amplify upon that today and see quite a number of things concerning his opinion that are very, very practical. Amar Rava. Rava says, it's on the bottom of the page, four lines from the bottom, it's bracketed. Amar Rava. Yisrael Mumar Ochel Nevelot Leteavon Bodek Sakin Vinotein Lo. The Gemara had said previously that one of the interpretations of the Mishnah was Hakol Shochtin, everybody's allowed to shech, is even a Yisrael Mumar. A Mumar is a rebel Jew who doesn't keep kosher. But why doesn't he keep kosher? Not because he's anti-God, because he gets ripped off every time you go to a kosher butcher. If kosher chicken and kosher meat would cost the same as non-kosher meat, of course he would go ahead and purchase only kosher meat. So such a person is called Ochel Nivelot Liteavon. What does that mean, Liteavon? For his benefit. That's why he's not observing kashrut. Not because he's defiant or rebellious. So such a person, you are allowed to trust his shechita. Can you imagine how far the Gemara was willing to go with trust of another Jew? Can you imagine? A guy eats non-kosher meat because it costs $10, 10 cents a pound more. And he's not paying 10 cents a pound more. You're allowed to trust the shechita as long as you are bodek, sakin, vinotein lo. As long as you check the knife and make sure that the knife is sharp, then you can let him shech the way, no problem, and you and I are permitted to eat the meat of that shechita. The assumption is that this person will do anything as long as it's not expensive, nor do I have to generate any extra effort. So if the knife is not smooth, he'll say, I'm not bringing it to a guy to sharpen. First of all, he's going to charge me. Secondly, I've got to waste my time. And if I've got to waste my time, I'll eat non-kosher meat. If I have to spend any money, I'll eat non-kosher meat. But all things given the same, equal, namely, there's no expense. So I go into ShopRite. And the kosher chicken and the non-kosher chicken are the exact same thing, 89 cents a pound. And I'll buy the kosher one. But if the kosher ones are $2.99 or $8.99 a pound, how much is a kosher chicken today? How much a pound? $2.99. And the non-kosher is $89. I'm not paying $2 an extra pound so that this should be a mashgiach there when he slaughters it. But if there is no effort and no expense, this person can be trusted lichatchila to eat from his shechita. Today, you'd be out of your mind if you would make such a proposition. Out of your mind. My taima. Why? So the Gemara says, bodek sakin v'noteno umutar le'echol mishchitato. My ta'ama, three lines from the bottom, kevan de'ika hetera ve'isura, since there is permissible and prohibited meat right in front of his nose, lo shavik hetera ve'ochal isura. He will never abandon the permissible meat and consume the prohibited meat if there is no effort or cost to his decision. That's called a mumar lite avon, somebody who does not observe only because it's beneficial to him in his pocket. As opposed to a mumar lahachis. He is a mumar, even la oso davar. That's the chidush. That's the chidush. Normally, if I were to tell you that this guy doesn't observe the laws of shatnez, I wouldn't need a gemara to tell me that you're allowed to eat from a shechita. Why? Because the fact that you don't care less about shatnez and wear shatnez doesn't tell us that you don't care about kashrut. The fact that I don't care about chametz on Pesach doesn't tell me that I don't care about kosher. I don't care about chametz, but I care about kosher. So you can eat chametz all yontiv, and you're allowed to eat in your house. While you're eating chametz, you can invite me for lunch. And I can assume that you're serving the kosher meat. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And me, you'll serve on a matzah sandwich with me. You'll eat bread, because you don't believe in chametz, and I'll eat matzah. No problem. But we can eat together. No problem. As opposed to a mumar lahachis, who is somebody who eats trefa meat, even though in the world of Mr. Rogers, make-believe, kosher meat costs less than trefa meat. If you can imagine such a thing. It has never happened. But imagine in the world of make-believe in Mr. Rogers, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Kosher meat costs less than non-kosher meat. A mumar lahachis will dafka buy the trefa meat. His shechita you can't trust. Here we're talking about umumar l'teavon for the very item that I want to trust him with. He doesn't care about kosher meat, and I can trust him with kosher meat as long as it's not done lehachis, but rather l'teavon. Yes.
So, first of all, I think it's just funny the personality state. This is when this was written. Personality. You can see the same personalities. People's personalities can change. That money and convenience is more important than. I just think it's just funny that now they're describing a person that like could live in our time also. But the other thing is, how do you know?
No. Have you really met somebody who would say, you know what, the only reason why I'm not keeping kosher is because it's too expensive?
No, but about other things.
What? Years ago? I've never met somebody.
No, I mean, just a very cheap person. But like then they wouldn't yeah. be really Walmart, ridiculous things to the point of not.
Yeah?
Like they do, maybe not about kashra, but they do things unethical because money is just so.
Yeah, okay.
But the thing I was going to say is, how do you ever know anyone's real motivation? So to me, whether they're doing it because they say it's because of money or because they're rebellious.
Because I see. I watch him. Somebody has watched it, and they went into ShopRite, and they saw if the prices were the same, he bought the kosher meat. As soon as the price of the kosher went up, he bought the trefa meat. That's the way we know. We have evidence. Uh-huh. Somebody has witnessed his behavior, his shopping pattern. That's all.
Doesn't it often still show a lack of belief? You're willing to cast it aside, even if...
Not really. We're so trained for looking, you know, looking down, casting aspersions on people. No, I believe in the Rabbi Shalom, but he's just costing me too much money. I've heard of people who don't send their kid to school, to a yeshiva, because tuition is too high. But I haven't met anybody who say, you know, I believe in kashrut, but just costs too much. I'll eat tafas. I haven't met such a person. But there might be some. In the time of the Gemara, there apparently was. Because they talk about reality. Many times.
Mumar lahachis is defined in terms of eating trefa meat.
It's correct.
Only that's.
No, depends what he's a mumar lahachis for.
Oh, okay. So it
could be for anything. Okay. Exactly. Exactly.
When you have to be boded the knife, so then it's either implying that this mumar lataiba is ignorant or not trustworthy. Because why do you have to be boded the knife?
Because if it's not sharp, he will not bother to smoothen it.
Why?
Because it's going to cost him time or money.
So
he's going to have to go to that guy in the truck who used to pass by our houses and ring the bell and we bring out our knives.
What if he does a shahiyah or whatever it is during the shahita?
He's not going to. Because there's no downside. What delay? What's he going to gain by not doing the shechita properly if he can do the shechita? What's the cost to him?
He didn't do it properly. It happened. Not that he intentionally.
Okay, so that could happen by any shochet.
Right, but an honest shochet would come to you and say, "This is not kosher."
And he would say the same thing.
Because he's afraid he would lose his credibility.
No, because he believes in lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol.
Well,
if it doesn't cost him any money.
Well, that's what I mean.
But it won't. This won't cost him any money.
It doesn't make sense.
If it won't, I know the profile of this person is...
not trustworthy.
This kind of... It's like you say, you make up stories like there are 0% chance of helping.
Okay. Yeah. I agree. I'm saying it's difficult.
Some people, when they came from Europe, worked on Shabbos. They could not find a job there.
But that's not the
type. Right. No, that is the ta'ava. That is because otherwise they would lose their job. Okay. They were Michal Shabbos because they didn't want to observe Shabbos, but the problem is that a Michal Shabbos,
you can't trust
a kosher. You forfeit trustworthiness in all areas of halacha if you desecrate the Shabbos in public.
Yeah. Where do we get that from?
Where do we learn that from?
Yeah.
We learn it out from a comparison. We'll learn the Gemara. It's the next, not tonight. Because that's the reason why.
Yeah.
Because it says if you deny that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in 6 days, mm-hmm. We'll see where we learn it out from. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what the Gemara says. Ask the Gemara, and the Gemara just says what I just said. Ihachi, if you can trust such a person, ki lo badak, even if you didn't check the knife, nami, you should also believe him. Why shouldn't you believe him? Answers the Gemara, why? Mitrach lo tarach. He's not going to go through the effort, the trouble of getting the knife sharpened. Because that's a pain. So if there is any expenditure or effort that he has to invest to get the kosher meat, that he's not prepared to do. So therefore, all I have to do is remove all obstacles. Sharpen the knife, run it along my nail and my tongue, and as a result, make sure it's perfectly smooth. And as a result, yeah, that's why shochtim don't talk. Because they check a knife, abisra v'atufra, something that is soft and something that's hard. That's how they check the knife.
Good about that we can shout because look at the company.
Now, so then there is a third category by kashrut. There is a third category by kashrut. That's called mumar she'eno choshesh. What do you think eino choshesh means? He couldn't care less. Meaning, he walks into the store and there is kosher meat available, he'll buy the kosher meat. Even if it costs a few more dollars. But if there's no kosher meat available, what will he do? He'll buy the tray for me. He just doesn't care. But he's not a mumar lahachis. If there was kosher and non-kosher available, what will he buy? He'll buy the kosher.
Even
if it's more expensive. But if it's not available, then I don't care less. Couldn't care less. So that's a third category, and there is somewhat of a debate to which extreme should we compare this mumar she'eino choshesh. Should he be compared more to the rebellious individual? Because after all, if there is no kosher meat, what is he going to do? What's he going to do? He's going to eat the tray for me, even if it costs him more money, because there ain't nothing else available. So to some extent, he's being a little rebellious. But on the other hand, if there is kosher meat available, even if it costs more than the non-kosher, he'll eat kosher. See, he's not really a total rebel. So there is a debate how to put that third category. Should he be equated to the mumar ochel mevelot l'teavon? In which case, essentially, he's trusted as long as you check the knife and you remove all obstacles? Or should he be like a mumar lahachis, under which circumstances we never accept a mumar lahachis as shechita? Never. Never. Okay. Amru le rabbanan le rava. So the Rabbanan said to Rava, Tanya de Misayelach, I will quote a brayta that supports your opinion. A brayta that supports your opinion. What does the brayta say? Chemtson shel ovrei aveira achar ha-pesach. Mutar miyad mipnei shehein machlifin. Chemtson shel ovrei aveira. What does that mean? Correct. Somebody never eats chametz on Pesach, but he's not burning his chametz either. Why is he going to burn his chametz? Because that's going to cost me some money. So I'll leave it in my house. I'll leave it in my house. Now it's after Pesach. So this chametz is deemed as chametz she'over olav ha-Pesach. Now we're going to see a machloikis between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon in just a moment about chametz she'over olav ha-Pesach. The Gemara is operating here on the assumption that it's biblically prohibited to eat chametz that has been in a Jew's possession during chametz, during Pesach. Biblically prohibited. So why are you and me allowed to eat this guy, this Jew's chametz? Why can we eat it? Says the Braita on the top of the page. Mipnei shehein machlifin. Mazel hachlif. They exchange it. They go over to their friendly Gentile and say, I got a pound of bread. Do you have a pound of bread? Sure. Let's just change the bread. It's exactly the same. Looks exactly the same. Like, but this is after Pesach.
Why didn't he just do that before?
Because it wouldn't help before.
I know, but I mean, he could have just sold it.
But he doesn't want... They didn't know of Mechiras Chametz. They didn't know about it. And after a while, when it started to become popular, the Gentiles started catching on. Never buy anything from a Jew, till any Chametz, until Erev Pesach. Because you're going to get a bargain. Bargain! So this guy knows he has a loaf of bread that he can sell. Normally, it's worth $5. Today he's only going to fetch a dollar for it because the guy says, you don't want to buy that for a dollar? Burn it. He's not prepared to do that. So after Pesach, he goes over to his local Gentile and says, I got a bread. You got a bread. Let's just change it. Well, what bread is in his hand? Is the guy's bread permissible?
Yeah.
Yes. Nothing more. It's not chametz olav of Pesach. So why am I allowed to eat it? Because we assume if there is an option available that will not cost him money, he will do it. And this is not going to cost him any money. It's a fair exchange. A pound of rye for a pound of rye. A pound of pumpernickel for a pound of pumpernickel. That's all. So what type of person is this Brisa talking about? A mumar ochel, not nivelot, a mumar over bayiran bayimatze l'teyavon. Only l'teyavon. Only l'teyavon.
So it's interesting because his character flaw is not having to do with deceiving other people.
That's correct. Really correct. That was the kuti. Yeah. The kuti didn't observe lifnei iver lo titen right. Mechshol. This guy believes in lifnei iver mechshol. I'm not going to get you to violate.
Right.
I'm not. So what does he do right after Pesach? He doesn't want to eat this bread himself. Because he knows it's usur. He just couldn't burn it. Because his ekeltim, it bothers him to what? To burn it. So he knows he's the... If I can go to my next door neighbor and say, trade me a pumpernickel for a rye, no problem. Now I'll eat the rye bread. So if he's going to eat it, you can eat it too. Because we assume that if there is no cost or expense, he will seek out that opportunity. Just as he's willing to shech the animal. Shech the animal is a little effort. So he will shech. If the animal's right here and the knife has been checked, I'll do it right. What the heck? No problem. So, says the Gemara, I just want to read a couple of more lines of the Gemara, then we're going to see a critical Rashi and a critical Tosfos. Savruha, we are of the opinion, Ha Mani, who is the author of this Braita? It didn't say any name in this Braita. Who is the author of this Braita? Rabbi Yehudahi. The author is Rabbi Yehuda. De Omar, Chomet, Achar HaPesach De'oraita. There is a famous debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Please go to page number 3 for just a moment. Then we'll come back to page number 2. This is a Gemara in Psachim, Daf Chaf Chet Amud Bet. The Gemara cited Rabbi Emachloikis between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. I'm going to tell you their opinions and then read the Gemara how they interpret it from the pasuk. Rabbi Yehuda says, Chometz Erev Pesach after Chatzot is asur to be eaten mid-de-oraita. Mid-de-oraita. You're not allowed to eat Chometz Erev Pesach after Chatzot. Then, of course, you're not allowed to eat Chometz on Pesach. And then Chomet Sh'avar Olav HaPesach, says Rabbi Yehuda, is Asur to be eaten Midda Oraita. Midda Oraita. Rabbi Shimon says, no. All three verses which Rabbi Yehuda quoted are all actually talking about Pesach itself. They are all, if you read the text, it's talking about Pesach. It's not talking about Erev Pesach, and it's not talking about after Pesach. But three times the Torah tells us don't eat chametz on Pesach. So what did Rabbi Yehuda ask? Why does the Torah have to tell me the same thing three times? So he says it must be that even though it's written on Pesach, it means to tell me something else. Once it's to tell me not chametz on Pesach. A second time it's telling me don't eat chametz erev Pesach after midday. And the third time is chametz she'avar olav haPesach. Do not eat chametz which was in a Jew's possession during Pesach. Rabbi Shimon says no. All three are prohibited. All three psukim refer to chametz on Pesach. So why did the Torah write it three times? To give you three X's in your record book every time you eat one kezias of chametz. So when you eat one piece of bread on Pesach, God doesn't take only write one X. He puts down three X's in your record book. And that's significant. Because the way... Now, Rambam, for example, writes in Hilchos Tshuva that that's one of God's calculations at time. He counts up merits versus demerits in order to determine whether you are zakai or chayv, guilty or innocent. So that's what he does on Yom Kippur. That's why people are a little more careful, you know, because you can get an extra plus. It sounds a little childish, but that's the way the Rambam believed based on a certain Gemara. So when you get three, that's going to weigh you down, you know, in your ultimate collection. But Rabbi Shimon says, it's asur midrabbanan to eat chametz she'avar olav haPesach. Asur midrabbanan to eat chametz she'avar olav haPesach. What about chametz lifnei haPesach? That's a separate machloikus. Some Rishonim say you're not allowed to eat midrabbanan. And then you have, I don't want to go into it, the famous Balamor, who says you're allowed to eat chametz all day Erev Pesach because there is no better way of getting rid of it. The Torah only tells you on Erev Pesach to get rid of your chametz. Ein lecha hashbasa gedoyla mizu. There's no better way of getting rid of it than eating chametz. No one agrees with him, but that's what he says. You should know about that Balamor's opinion. But let's talk about after Pesach. Rabbi Shimon says it's asur only midrabbanan. We paskin like the Rambam, who splits his psak. Before Pesach, the Rambam paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that eating chametz on Erev Pesach is asur midoraita, and you get lashes if you eat chametz on Erev Pesach after Chatzot. If you eat chametz on Pesach, you get karet, whatever karet means. You die early, whatever that means. And chametz after Pesach is only asur midrabbanan. Why did the Rabbanan prohibit it? Because they wanted us to sell our chametz or get rid of it. So as a fine, they said, if you're not going to get rid of it, we are prohibiting it to you to eat. Didn't. So that's what the Gemara says on page 3. My time of the Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reason why Rabbi Yehuda says that chametz lifnei and after Pesach is asur midoraita? Tulata krai ksivi. 3 psukim are written. Lo yochal chametz, 1. Kol machmetzet lo sochelu, 2. Lo tochal alav chametz, 3. How does he darshan it? 1. Chad lifnei zmano, 1 before Pesach arrives. V'chad le'achar zmano, and 1 is after Pesach. V'chad le'toch zmano. And the Gemara talks about Rabbi Shimon, he uses those psukim for something else. Something else. So now, back to page 2. Back to page 2. After all, ladies and ladies, why did we cite this brayta? Why did we cite this brayta? To bring proof for whom? What was his name? Rava. Rava said that you are allowed to eat the meat of a mumar ochel nevelot l'teyavon. Well, if that's the case, are we dealing with an Issa d'Oraisa or an Issa d'Rabbanan eating nevela? Of course we're doing a d'Oraisa. So now our Gemara says, if we're going to quote a Braita to prove that Rava is correct, from which halacha about eating chametz after Pesach, we have to be dealing with another Issa d'Oraita. Because if eating chametz was only an Issa midrabbanan, right, we might say, for the Rabbanan, we'll rely on this guy who didn't sell his chametz. But that's not going to prove that we trust this guy by an Issa d'Oraisa. Therefore, the Gemara says, back on the top of the page 2, Savruha, we are of the opinion, Ha-mani Rabbi Yehudahi. The author of this brisa must be Rabbi Yehuda. De Omar, who said, Chametz achar ha-Pesach de oraita, that chametz after Pesach is asur to be eaten mid de oraita. Ukatani, and the brisa said, mipnei shehein machlifin. Because why do I allow you to eat their chametz? This guy, because they switch it. Alma, we see, lo shavek hetera v'achel isura. We see that these people, if there is no financial loss, they will never eat something prohibited if there is no financial loss. So there is no loss trading a pumpernickel for a nacha pumpernickel. There is no loss. Since there is no loss, he does that. He goes to his Gentile neighbor and says, I got a loaf of bread, let's trade. And that's it. So the Gemara proves that if you have a person who does not observe an Issa d'Oraisa, as long as it's not from a rebelliousness, but rather because it costs money, you can trust that person in a situation where it's not going to cost them any money to eat properly, to eat kosher, to eat that which is permissible. That's what the Gemara says. Anybody, any questions on that before I start attacking? Yes?
I'd be thinking that bread would be more than a little gold. Why on earth would the non-Jew want to make that trade? Yeah. Isn't that unappealing bread?
Well, he also has bread that's a week old. That's the case. We can make up any
refrigeration.
That's correct.
I think bread that's over a week old should get moldy.
Nah, they had they put in preservatives. I don't know. How am I supposed to know?
Okay, I mean,
just play the game.
Okay.
That's all. He had it.
Okay.
That's
box
all.
Of pasta.
What?
It's a box of pasta.
Box of pasta. Yeah, that's all. Yeah. It's a box of pasta. That's all. Yeah. Or a bottle of beer. Or a bottle of schnapps. That's also chametz. In fact, he said, yeah. Now, I'd like to focus on this comparison for a second between our case in the Gemara about the guy who eats nevela meat and this case about chametz. What prohibition is the guy in our Gemara not careful with if it's going to cost him any money? What prohibition is he not careful with if it's going to cost him any money? Nevela. He'll eat meat that's just on the shelf of the store. How did that meat get into the store? Somebody killed it. No kosher shechita. That's nevela. He's not going to eat pork. He's going to eat regular roast beef. But it's not shechted properly. Ochel nevelos l'teavon. So now, I, who want to avoid eating nevela meat, am allowed to trust him because I assume that if it doesn't cost him any money, what will he not violate? The law of nevela. For himself. And therefore, he will tell me that it's okay. But it's the concern is that in this case, the very same prohibition that he might violate if it cost him money is the very same violation that he will not violate if it doesn't cost him any money. Which is that? Nevela. By chametz, we're talking about two different prohibitions. Which prohibition did he violate because it's going to cost him money? Keeping in your possession. That's called Bayera and Bayimatze. After Pesach, you don't violate Bayera and Bayimatze any longer. What's the issue after Pesach? Eating chametz.
Mm-hmm.
How does one shed light on the other? In this case, the violation and the non-violation are two separate issues. He violated during Pesach the prohibition of Bayera and Bayimatze. How did he violate that? Because had he destroyed it, what would have happened? It would have cost him money. He would have had to take his bottle of liquor and pull it down the drain. Now after Pesach, he went ahead and changed it with his friend. That's not indicating that he observes Bayera and Bayimatze when it doesn't cost him anything. What does it show? What is he not willing to violate when it doesn't cost him any money? What prohibition after Pesach?
Eating
chametz. How does that shed light on our case where it's the exact same thing? Maybe in that Gemara, you know why I can trust this guy? Because the violation of his is not really the same as the potential that I'm going to be eating something non-kosher at this particular minute. It's not. It's two separate issues. He will not violate Bayera and Bayimatze if it doesn't cost him a nickel. The minute it will cost him a nickel, he will keep the chametz in his house. Okay. So he can never be trusted that he will sell the chametz. It's now after Pesach. You don't violate Bayera and Bayimatze after Pesach any longer. There is a separate prohibition. What's that separate prohibition?
Eating
chametz. So you're right. Eating chametz. He would not eat chametz. He doesn't eat chametz on Pesach. He doesn't eat chametz after Pesach. On chametz, he's got no excuse. he's got no way out of it. So after Pesach, he trades it with the Gentile. But how does that shed light on a case where I want to eat from you who are violating the very same prohibition that I have to trust you on? It's a little different. What's the only common feature in the two things of this guy eating chametz? That what? That it's dealing with what? With the same type of object. What's the common denominator? One is chametz, the food. One is an Isur chametz, and the other one's an Isur chametz. Maybe that's the connection. But conceptually, the analogy should be challenged. Because you could come to the conclusion in the Braita that by chametz I will accept it, because it's not the violation of the of this Jew on Pesach. It's totally something else. Whereas by the Jew who's eating nevela, you're asking me to trust him for nevela if he's not going to violate nevela at this time if it doesn't cost him any money. That I don't know.
You're saying that the analogy works in some ways and it doesn't work completely in other ways.
Correct. It's not a complete analogy because there are two stages to this nevela guy, this ochel l'teavon. He's not an ochel chametz l'teavon on Pesach. He doesn't eat a morsel of chametz.
But the comparisons are drawn to underscore the status of the avera, like, right? Isn't that the point?
It's designed to teach us that if it doesn't cost him any money, he will not violate an avera. But which avera will he not violate after Pesach if it doesn't cost the avera of not eating chametz, which was a... But he did violate the law of Bayron Bayimatzeh. That's what he did, l'tei avon. So the fact that it's only l'tei avon, Bayron Bayimatzeh, that's to shed light, oh, that's going to influence us on what? About eating the chametz after Pesach. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi's going to raise a very significant question. Take a look at the top Rashi and then the next Rashi. Says the Braita, Mutar Miyad. What does Miyad mean? Right after Pesach. Right after Pesach. The Afal Gav, Delo Shoha, Kidela Efot. Even though you didn't wait until what? The time it could have taken him to bake another loaf of bread. So if it's right after Pesach, undoubtedly, which bread is he offering you? The chametz she'avar olav ha-Pesach. Divadai avar oleha ha-Pesach. Nonetheless, mutar liksheirim le'echol mechem tzon miyad. A kosher, an observant Jew, is allowed to eat this guy's chametz the second Pesach is over.
Because
he switches it. With what? Bishel ovdei kochavim. He doesn't switch it with other Jews' chametz. He switches it with a Gentile's chametz.
It still seems that these two examples are predicated much more on the fact that you could trust him because he's not over on...
Yes, 100%. That's what the Gemara's intention is, no doubt. The kevon dematzi le'echol hetera, since he can eat permissible chametz, the chemtzon shel oved kochavim, she'avar olav ha-pesach mutar, lo achil d'day, he will not eat his own chametz if he can eat a Gentile's. The chametz shel Yisrael she'avar olav ha-pesach asur. It is prohibited. But he's not going to eat a prohibited piece of bread if he can what? Eat a permissible piece of bread. Okay. Now I'm going to set up Rashi's question. I want you to ask Rashi's question. I'm just going to set it up for you. When we say that the Torah writes lo tochal olav chametz, lo tochal, does it only include the prohibition of eating or deriving any benefit from that chametz. That is correct. Rabbi Avohu, this is another machloikis that you must know. You can't go to the world to come without knowing this machloikis. It's a machloikis, Rabbi Avohu and Chizkia. Rabbi Avohu says, every single time that the Torah writes, lo tochal, lo yochal, or lo tochelu, it includes not only a prohibition of eating, but even of hana'ah as well. Unless the Torah explicitly stipulated that you're allowed to have benefit. So there is one time, two times that I know of, that the Torah stipulates that benefit is permissible. The Torah tells us in Parshas Re'eh that you're not permitted to eat nevela. Lager asher bisharecha titnena va'achala o machur l'nachri. What are you allowed to do with nevela meat? Give it to your neighbor or sell it to a gent, sell it to him. So there the Torah says you're allowed to derive benefit. Or the Torah says you're not allowed to eat trefa meat. Trefa meat means an animal that was slaughtered properly. It's a kosher animal, but it has one of the eight trefot that are enumerated in the third parak of Maseches Kol, which we will not learn. So it has a punctured lung. Punctured lung? Which makes it a trefa. So what does the Torah tell you so? La kelev tashlichun oto. Feed it to Fluffy. That means you're going to get benefit. Because you don't have to buy a box of Alpo that day. You can just give him a tray for meat. So unless the Torah prohibits it, says Rabbi Avohu, it automatically includes both the Isra Achila and the Isra Ano. Chizkiah disagrees with Rabbi Avohu and says that in order for something to become Asur Bahana'ah, the Torah has to stipulate it. If the Torah uses the expression of what? Tochal, it means only what? You're not allowed to eat. Unless the Torah uses the word lo ye'achel. Not, it shall not be consumed. Then it includes hanah. Now chametz, it happens to say both. Three times it says lo ki tochal, lo tochelu, kol mach lo tochelu, and lo tochal of chametz. And once it says lo ye'achel. So chametz, according to everybody, is asur ba'achila and abahana. Okay, I said enough. Ask Rashi's question. Yes.
But when you trade with the Gentile, you're getting benefit.
Of course. The bread which was in your house is not only asur ba'achila, it's asur ba'hana. So if it's asur ba'hana, what do you have to do with isurei hana? Junk it.
Yeah.
By trading it with a guy, it's as if what? You sold it. That's making money.
Even if it's
easy. Even it, I'm getting a benefit. I'm getting another piece of bread.
An edible piece of bread.
That's Rashi's question. Let's see how Rashi handles this. The first narrow line, the af al gav the hashta nami isuhu legabe, even though we should say it is still prohibited, why should I say it's still prohibited? Daha mithane mechamet she'avar olav ha-pesach. He is still deriving benefit from what? From chametz she'al over pesach. De'i lo de'yahiv leil ovi kachavim. Had I not given my bread to the Gentile, what would happen? Lo hevi yahiv leil didei. If I didn't give my pumpernickel, he's not giving me his pumpernickel. So I derived benefit from my chametz pumpernickel she'avar olav ha-pesach. Afilu hechi, nonetheless, kol ma the matzi lemeevet behetera purta of it. Whatever he can do, he's still going to do. What do you mean he's still going to do? What does he accomplish by trading it if it's still a davar ha'asur? Uledidan miyashari. There still might be a problem for him to eat that bread. The rabbis said, buddy, you tried to fool us. You tried to dupe us. You're not allowed to eat it. Midurabbanan. But anybody else is not included in the prohibition. Why is it not included in the prohibition? Because once you have something which is asur bahana'ah, and you trade it with someone else, that other product that you get in return is not considered isurei hana'ah. The product itself is not prohibited. So although you're not supposed to do it, and you violated the prohibition by exchanging it and deriving benefit from it, it does not necessarily have a reciprocal prohibition on it. Because there are only two things, says Rashi, that do have such a reciprocal trade. If you trade something for avodah zarah, okay, I have a getchka. A getchka, something to which I bow down to, a real idol. You're not allowed to have any benefit from it. And I sell it to you. The cash that I receive, I am not allowed to benefit from it. Not allowed to. I buy something with that cash, I buy a television, I'm not allowed to watch it. Not allowed to watch with it. It remains asur le'olam va'ed. That's avodah zarah. One other thing Rashi will say is peirot shvi'it. The sabbatical year fruits. You're only supposed to eat them. You're not supposed to go ahead and sell them. If you sell them, the first exchange is prohibited. The first. So I have apples that grew during the sabbatical year. I sold them to you, and I got money. I'm not allowed to use that money. But if I did use the money and buy pears, I'm allowed to eat the pears. By avodah zarah, it's leolam vaed. By shvi'it, it's the first exchange. But in our Gemara, we're not dealing with avodah zarah. We're not dealing with shvi'it. We're dealing with chametz. So chametz, the minute I exchange it, despite the fact that what? I should not do so because I am violating the benefit clause. I'm getting benefit from it, but once I exchange it, it's no longer the item. And mid the oraita, I, the person who kept the chametz in my house over Pesach, am allowed to use it and benefit from this exchange. Who told me not to use it? The Rabbanan. But the Rabbanan didn't say that if I slice a piece of bread for you, that you have to worry about it. Since me'ikar hadin, it's not considered something prohibited, therefore our Gemara says, now we repeat the case. I had chametz, now I'm serving you a piece of bread right after Pesach. You're allowed to eat it. Because what assumptions do we make? One, that I exchanged it. Number two, even though I was not allowed to exchange it, the product itself that I received in return is permissible to me on a Torah law. And it's permissible to you even based on rabbinic law. Therefore, you're allowed to eat it. And I will do everything I can to make sure that I don't violate anything if it doesn't cost me anything. Yeah.
Is this machlif in the precursor to selling chametz, and that's why
it might be. Selling is better because you actually there is a mishnah at the beginning of the second parak that talks about mechimas chametz, but not the way we do it. You go out to the street and you sell the chametz to a gentile. He gives you the cash and you never see him again.
Just get rid of it.
Just get rid of it.
But that's a whole different concept.
Correct.
But that's why I'm thinking the way we do it. It's described as Rashi's way. It's a little sneaky.
Yeah, right. No doubt. That's what Tosva says. That's what Rashi says. And I want to give you an example of how this just want to give you the terms, the terminology, so you can handle it properly. If I have something like Avodah Zarah, this tape recorder, I worship Avodah Zarah. You know, my God, my Getchka. Very nice. Even though it has no hands, but it doesn't talk. It doesn't talk. Pelahem v'lo yidaber. It doesn't talk.
You can play in the
trunk. But I know. Yeah, but it doesn't see. It doesn't have a camera in it. It doesn't see. And I'm below you. Fine. So, when I exchange it, we say that this is not tofes et dameha. Dameha is damim, its value. It doesn't grab tofes. It doesn't grab. The isur is not powerful enough to create a prohibition on its exchanged value. If the Avodah Zarah, it does. So when I have this is Avodah Zarah, and I switch it for this notebook, the notebook becomes Asur, and we call it this Avodah Zarah is Tofes et Domeh. Whatever it's exchanged for becomes Avodah Zarah. It's not really Avodah Zarah, but it has the halachic status of Avodah Zarah, and you're now allowed to benefit from it.
What about, can someone else benefit?
No. It becomes a prohibited item. Prohibited item. So chametz is not tofes et omeha. Chametz is not tofes et omeha. It's asur, you're not allowed to derive benefit from the chametz, but if you exchange it, the exchanged product is permissible. Okay, so we have avodah zarah is tofes et omeha, and chametz and most prohibited foods are not tofes et omeha. I want to show you a case that has nothing to do with foods, where the Mishnah applies this concept of tfisat damim. It's a very interesting application. Please go to page 4 for a minute. A very interesting application. It's sideways. That's the way the machine was able to focus there. And it talks about shuls that are closing up. And we know about those things. Shuls closing up.
The Bronx.
Yes. East Flatbush. Right. Brownsville. Sure. Washington Heights. Yes. So the Mishnah says, B'nei ha'ir shimachru rechova shel ir. Forget about that line. It's not relevant to my discussion tonight. Line 2. Beit ha'knesset. If the people decided to sell a Beit Knesset, Lokhin Teva. What must you do with the money? You can't buy a bowling alley with it. You can't even buy another Beit Knesset with it. You have to buy something with a higher level of Kedusha. So what is a teva? Teva is like, according to Sram, it's the Aron, where they house the Sefer Torah. Now, why is that? Why can't I buy a bowling alley with the money that I get for selling a Beit Knesset? Because a Beit Knesset is tofes et damav. There is sanctity to a Beit Knesset. When I exchange it for money, the money now gets the sanctity. The Beit Knesset will become a church, unfortunately.
They can.
But they're not. We're not supposed to sell it to them if we know it's going to be a church. But if somebody buys it to be a parking lot and decides I'm going to use it as a church, that's their prerogative. We can't sell it knowing that it's going to be a church, even though there are so many Batei Knesset that were unfortunate, Litzareinu, converted right to a church because the church bought a... Who wants to buy a shul? Only a communal organization like that would buy a shul. Would buy a shul. So here, the money now becomes kadosh. And there are restrictions on money that is holy. So the only way which the Mishnah allows you to redeem that money is for something that is ma'alin bakodesh ve'ein mo redeem. You have to go up in Kedusha.
Why couldn't you stay the same level?
Because you can go up. Because ma'alin bakodesh means you got to go up. That's what it says. The only question will be on the last thing on the list. If you sell a Sefer Torah. So the Gemara will say, you're not allowed to sell the Sefer Torah, unless for three things. That's not our topic tonight. A second illustration. Teva, if they sell the Aron HaKodesh, what must you do with the money? Lokhin mitpachot. Maza mitpachas, the mantle of a Sefer Torah. The closer you get to the Sefer Torah, the higher the Kedusha. So the Aron is one level of Kedusha. The Mitpachas covers the cloth itself. So it has a higher level of Kedusha. Mitpachot, if you sell the mantle of a Sefer Torah, Lokhin Sfarim. Sfarim doesn't mean what we have in our houses, Sfarim. No, it means a single written scroll on a manuscript, on a parchment, but just of Chumash Shmos, just of Bereishis, just of Vayikra. That's how most people used to learn. Uh-huh. It's a little too heavy schlepping a Sefer Torah around from place to place. So they used to write single scrolls of Bereishis and Shmos and Vayikra and Bamidbar and Devarim. Can you imagine with your grandchildren, you're going to have to go to five Chumash parties. Today's getting his Bereishis. Next week he's getting his Shmos. Next month he's getting five for each grandchild. Can you imagine us? We'll be loony bins sitting in yeshiva elementary schools for those parties. It's painful enough to watch one of them. But I go. Sifarim, if you sell a single volume Bereishis, it's written like a Sefer Torah, but it's only Bereishis, then Lokhin Torah, because that's the highest level you can go. So this Mishnah in Megillah is predicated upon two principles. One, that a Beit Knesset is Tofes et Damav. When I exchange a Beit Knesset for money, the money takes on the halachic status of holy money. Two, when redeeming that holy money, you have to apply the rule of ma'alin bakodesh ve'ein moridin. Mm-hmm. Yes?
What if you're a sofer and you write a Sefer Torah?
If what?
If you're a sofer, you write a Sefer Torah and you sell it to someone.
Right.
And he gives you money.
Good.
Is there now holy money that you can't spend on food?
No, that's... Exactly. You're not paying him for the Sefer Torah, paying him for the time that he spent writing it. But a Sefer Torah you're not going to sell.
So he did not actually sell a Sefer Torah.
Okay. Correct.
He's
paid for his service. Correct. There's only three occasions for which you're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah. One is to hire a teacher. That's one. Two is to betroth a woman. I have no money, I gotta get married. You're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah to get married.
So it's higher than...
That's more important than a Sefer Torah, yeah. And three is Pidyon Shvuyim, mm-hmm. to redeem a captive. You can sell a Sefer Torah to redeem a captive.
Very
poignant. Because those situations are reflecting a living Sefer Torah. A Jew who's a living Sefer Torah has a higher level of Kedusha than a Sefer Torah. So, but I just want to, I showed you this Mishnah because I want to show you the concept of Tofes Damim. It's not only by Isuri Hana'ah. It's applied here. It's a unique application. It doesn't happen too frequently. Usually the concept of Tfisat Damim is limited to things that are prohibited in Hana'ah. Orla, fruits that you're not allowed to, first 3 years. Orla is Asar B'Hana'ah. You're not allowed to sell them to make a profit. If you sell Perot of Orla, The money is usur. Oh, excuse me, it's mutter. Because it's not tofes etomel. Only avodah zarah, shmita, the first exchange. After that, it's goes l'chulin. All right, we'll stop here. Continue next to Bach.